TheFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 205. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I break down the BYU football season thus far and hand out grades to all the position groups and give kind of our mid-season report card for the BYU football team. We also discuss Cougars in the pros, Utah State's whipping of Boise State, and we share our excitement about the Star Wars Episode 7 trailer. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout and listen to us yap right now. Rise and Shout Podcast, the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Matt, what's up? Do I need to restart this? Matt, I've lost you already. We're 16 seconds in. What the heck is going on? You can do this in the middle. You can't do it in the beginning. Nobody even knows what you're laughing about. All right.
Sorry, this has never happened to me before.
So should we restart this thing? No, let's press on, I guess.
All right, yeah, let's go ahead. Let's just roll.
Let's press on,
Matt. Just roll with it. It's fine. I can be professional about it.
I doubt that's the case, actually, based on the first 50 seconds of this.
I think it's actually too late for that.
Yeah, I think you've passed that. So, Matt, yesterday was a monumental day.
Yes, it was.
And we will head to the tweet bag. We will head to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Okay, gosh, man, you're off your game. Get in the game, buddy. Get in the game.
Get in the game.
Jed Higginson. Oh yeah, wasn't that the? What's that from? Get in the game.
It's in the game. I don't know how to do it. My son does it really well.
If it's in the game.
EA Sports.
If it's in the game. It's in the game. All right. So Jed Higginson, that's at Jed Higgy on Twitter. He says, on the 0 to Ty Detmer scale, how excited are you for Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens? Matt, 0 to Detmer, how excited are you?
0 to Detmer, I'm probably somewhere in the... I'm not Detmer excited. I'm just not quite that into it. But after the trailer, I'm probably Steve Young excited.
Pretty,
I'm up on that end of the
that's
scale.
That's pretty darn excited. As you know, I think it should be that McMahon should be at the top. So guess how excited I am.
You're Detmer.
Tom Brady.
Oh, he is not on the scale.
You are off
the charts excited.
I am off the scale excited. I am very excited. After seeing the trailer, I have two things to say. First of all, the trailer gave me goosebumps. And I may have gotten emotional.
You cried? You cried during the trailer?
I didn't cry at the trailer. I screamed like a small child.
That does not surprise me, actually, at all.
Yeah.
I've heard you scream before.
No, you shouldn't be surprised. The second part is, you know, I usually defend my fellow geeks, but gosh darn it, can geeks just, like, enjoy something without tearing it apart? Like, the movie poster comes out, and everyone is like... ripping it. Well, there's not this, and what does this mean? It's like, oh my gosh, people, it's a movie, it's for fun. Like,
can't enjoy it.
I'm a geek. Like, and people have said, well, I'm keeping my episode one destroyed my childhood, and I'm keeping my hopes down. My hopes are high, because you know what's better than going in with low and getting kind of surprised? When you go in with super high hopes and they're met. That's the coolest, isn't it? Isn't that true?
That is actually pretty cool.
That's the coolest. Like, when you're already jazzed, and then you walk out even more jazzed.
And if episode one's the worst thing that ever happened to you, like, it's been a good run.
You know,
if Jar Jar Binks is, like, the most terrible thing you've ever seen in your life, like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And you can just play Star Wars Battlefront and be a droid and just kill Gungans. That's what I did for therapy for episode one.
Jar Jar Binks.
Anyway, so I'm very excited. I do have tickets for opening night.
You have tickets already?
I do. Well, they went on sale. We're recording this on Tuesday night. They went on sale Monday. I have tickets, and I may or may not be recording this podcast in my Darth Vader hoodie.
You are definitely recording this in a Darth Vader hoodie.
I have a BYU t-shirt on underneath the Darth Vader hoodie, though.
Well, and I think Darth Vader was actually wearing a BYU t-shirt underneath.
I think that's true. I think that's true. Especially when he turned to good at the end. He had a U of U t-shirt on earlier in his life. But so, Matt, let's get going. We have,
Anakin was a Utah fan.
Yeah, Anakin was definitely a Utah fan. Luke loves BYU. So, Matt, we've got a lot to talk about. We're, of course, going to look at some stuff that has happened, but we're also going to talk about our midseason review for the football team, hand out some grades, talk about who we like and what we've liked so far, and, of course, talk a little bit about the Cincinnati game. But before we do that, Matt, let's go to CougarFan.com, Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
So, number five, women's soccer, over the last week has blanked San Diego and Pacific. They're now 12-1-1. One of the cool things, Matt, is they are leading the nation in attendance.
So yeah, they're like breaking records with attendance. Yes. I mean, it's unreal, right?
So they're averaging 4,208 fans at South Field there in Provo. More than 1,000 fans per game higher than the next team. That is pretty amazing.
Because they're so blanking good.
1,000 fans more, not per game. That would be a lot. Yes, they are quite good. And man, you know, when we were in school, the women's team got decent crowds and it was a pretty good crowd, but it has in the last few years just taken off completely.
They've put a lot of stands in. I mean, they've done some things to try and promote that sport. And the team's been very successful, which obviously that's really what does it.
Yeah, and they've been on radio and stuff too, so you can, and on BYU TV, so you can, when you're not there, you can see the games, which I think helps folks too to stay connected. Nadia Gomes right now leads the team with 5 goals and 3 assists, and we've talked about her before on the podcast, but Rachel Boaz is allowing 0.29 goals per game and has thrown, I think, not thrown, but I think 7 shutouts. That's good. Now, obviously, her defense has to be good, too. They're at San Francisco and at Santa Clara this weekend. I expect that next time we talk, Matt, they will be 14-1-1. So,
yep.
I think that will be the case. So, good luck this week to the women's soccer team. Women's volleyball, ranked number 12, they continue to win as well. They swept both Gonzaga and Portland. At Pepperdine and Loyola Marymount this weekend, they are 17-2. They've won 6 straight matches since their last loss, and in those 6 matches have dropped only 3 sets. So it's pretty – they are having a pretty awesome run as well. So, Matt, let's go to BYU players in the pros. I do not have a new sound effect. I did not do it.
Okay, so insert your own Goodell speaking getting booed sound effect here.
Yes, insert that. Picture it in your mind's eye. Ziggy was shut out this week. He's been dealing with some health issues. Unga continues, Matt. 6 more tackles this past week for the Giants. He's a stud right now. A potential Pro Bowl player based on his statistics so far this year.
Which is crazy. And we talked about this last week. Of all the guys that were coming out in that period of time, he wouldn't have been your top 2 or 3.
No, he'd been hurt. I mean, I thought great that he made a roster and hopefully he can stick around and, you know, by midseason maybe work his way into the lineup, not be one of the Giants' most productive defensive players, you know, 6 weeks in. I don't know who would have predicted that, right?
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So the other Tyler Haas had 10 points in a loss for Friends of the Basketball or whatever that team is in Spain. Matt Jimmer in the bad news category gets his 2nd preseason did not play coach's decision. In 2 preseason games, he's 2 for 10 from the floor. Jimmer may be joining Tyler in Europe, unfortunately.
It's not looking good for Jimmer.
It's not looking great, but you never know. Maybe Popovich is already decided how to use Jimmer and it's a secret, Matt. It's a top secret. Probably not. In related news to the Cougars, Gary Croton just kind of up and left SUU, said he was leaving there for personal reasons, and now he's popped up as he is going to be an offensive consultant at Oregon State and helping them take one of the worst offenses in the country and maybe get a little better. So, Matt, what do you, when you hear the words Gary Croton, what do you think of?
I think of mediocre football teams.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't want to pile on Gary Croton, but when Gary Croton was coming to BYU, I kind of felt like he was coming from an NFL team that had. I mean, it's not like they were blowing the doors off of people. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I mean, he's decent.
The truth
but
be
he's,
told,
he's not a good head coach. So maybe a role like this is a better fit for him.
Yeah, he struggled, though, even as an offensive coordinator in the last few years, getting things to go probably the way he wanted. But, you know, we wish him well in his endeavors with Oregon State. So, Matt, let's talk football now. The rest of the show from here on out will be nothing but football talk. So
yeah.
If you're not interested in football, you can turn us off, but if you're not interested in football, I'm not sure why you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah, what are you
in the
doing here
place.
In the first place?
Like, go That's away. Crazy. Go do something else. You know, go make fun of the Star Wars trailer or something.
Or maybe you're into the Star Wars trailer. You should just go watch it.
Go watch it again. How many times have you watched it, Matt? Just the once?
Just the once.
Okay. I won't tell you how many times I've watched it then.
It's
okay.
More than one.
It is greater than one. Yes,
it's
that is
it's
accurate.
A multiple of one, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is. It is all of those things. All right. So Cincinnati, Matt, we'll do two things each. Your first, something you learned about the Cougars this week.
Well, one of the things I think, I don't know that this is really new, but it was absolutely confirmed in my mind. This team is in better shape than almost everybody we've played.
Yes. Yeah, that's clear.
They are bringing it in the fourth quarter, and that's what's allowed them to win some of these games.
Yeah.
You look at what they did late in the game to Cincinnati's quarterback, what the defense was able to do. I mean, they are really bringing it in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you there. My first takeaway, Matt, was this defense is getting better. Like, yes. Over the course of the year, there is improvement. Now, some of that is injury-related. Obviously, Longy was out for a few games, and he is one of the, I think, very clearly at this point, one of the two or three best players on the defensive side of the ball. But I also look at our defensive backs. I don't know what adjustments were made, but we went from not being able to cover them at all in the first half to all of a sudden there was nobody to throw to. In the second half. And, you know, I'm impressed by that. Matt, what else did you take away, big takeaway from Friday night's game?
If this hamstring deal with Tanner becomes an ongoing concern, we're in real trouble. Because in the first half, he could not plant and throw off of that foot.
But he couldn't in the second half.
Things were sailing on him. I think he must have received some type of treatment at halftime. Because you look at him in the first half, he was walking around ginger on it. He was not throwing off of that foot, so that the passes were coming in high. And if they can't figure out a way to get that under control, and I don't know if the solution to that is that he's got to sit this weekend or something, but I think you got to give him some time and let that thing heal up. Because you know those are nagging injuries, and it's only going to get worse if they don't find some way to help, you know, kind of shore that up a little bit.
So pop quiz, hotshot. How many times was Tanner Mangum sacked on Friday night?
I don't know the answer to that question.
The answer is zero.
Yeah.
You know, he had problems throwing the football. His mobility didn't seem greatly affected because he's not a running quarterback, right? His mobility is all about moving in and out of the pocket. They did some design rollouts, you know. But like you said, in the first half, something was off. The planting was wrong. The ball was not its usual laser beam self. So definitely that. Matt, the other part I took away from this game is we have a rushing game.
Yes.
Now, granted, it's playing Cincinnati. They were not a great defense. I get that. But one of the great things is, with hopefully Riley Burt's not seriously hurt, and Francis Bernard, we now have potentially three running backs that can be rotated through. And, you know, if Hine gets back, you have four, where at the beginning of the season, I wasn't sure we had one. So,
yeah.
Hands off to the coaching staff that these Algie Brown's gotten better, and Francis Bernard and Riley Burt, obviously young but different kind of runners than Algie. I'm impressed with the running game. It's never going to be our strength this year, but I think it will be good enough for us to win the rest of the games on our schedule.
No, absolutely. And I think it's fun to see how they've been able to bring some of these younger guys on and do it in a way that's set them up to be successful. And they've been able to do that because Algie Brown has been able to handle, you know, a pretty steady workload.
Yeah.
And so that is encouraging to see. You know, when you think of, you know, when you lost Jamal, we all just kind of figured, oh, we're in real trouble here. And nobody was expecting these guys to do much. So it's great to see. This is like what you were talking about before. This is our expectations weren't real high, and we came in and we've kind of been blown away here, and that's nice.
That is nice. It's not as cool as having high expectations for Tanner Mangum and then he hits them though. Huh?
That's true. I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
Because I think we all believed, maybe not for this season, we were all hoping he'd maybe play against Wagner this week. And now this week we're talking about we don't want to play against Wagner. Matt, over-under, and this is the only preview we're going to do for Wagner, over-under 10 snaps for 10 and a half snaps for Tanner on Saturday against Wagner.
Unfortunately, I think it's going to be over. Well, if I were in charge, it would be under. I think the coaching staff's going to go a slightly different route here. Because 10 and a half snaps, I mean.
I think he does one series, dude. I think that's it. So I'm going to go under. But I won't be shocked if he plays the whole half or, you know, but I don't think he plays more than a half, right? Does he play more than a quarter?
Because
are you really worried about using a year of Bo Hodges' eligibility?
You had a hard time with that word just now.
Eligibility. I got it out this second.
Edulability.
Edulability.
I think at this point you just kind of have to assume that it's some – that. I don't think we're done with Bo this year. I think we're going to see some more of Bo.
Right.
So I think you go ahead and you play him. You get him some of that game experience. Now, what that means for him and the timing of his career and all these other types of things, I mean, I'm not sure. You do have to take that into account. But I think it's foolish to think that we're not going to see more of him based on the hamstring and this other stuff. So right. I think you probably just go ahead and play him.
Well, let's go forward here, Matt. Mid-season review, okay? We're going to hand out some awards. We're going to talk about some things. But we're going to give out grades, Matt, to each of the position groups. So let's start out with QBs, Matt. What is your grade for the QB play so far in the first half of the 2015 season?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with an A-.
A-, that's quite high.
You know, but if you look at completion percentage, you look at how Tanner's taken advantage of this opportunity. He's kept us in a position to win games, with the exception of one. You win those games at the end on those plays because you were in a position to do so. I think you have to be pleased with the way the quarterback play has panned out. There's not a lot to complain about there, in my opinion.
There really isn't. He has not thrown a ton of interceptions. He has completed, there's just the UCLA game that sits out there as kind of this outlier for him. The Michigan game, I'm sorry, that sits as this outlier where he just seemed helpless, right? And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, I think the coverage was phenomenal. He took what the defense gave him. Unfortunately, on that day, they gave him almost nothing. He's not been sacked more frequently than you would expect of a freshman quarterback. I'm with you. A- seems fair to me. Seems fair to me. And if you had told me I'd be handing out an A-minus to QB play and that Taysom would have only played less than a half, right? I would have said, yeah, we're probably – I would have thought, well, even if Tanner's doing okay, I'm going to give him like a B-minus. You know what I mean? Because he's a freshman. But the offense is not as good as last year, but that's okay. They're still pretty good. Running backs, Matt.
Running backs, I'm gonna have to go. I'm going with a B to a B plus on the
Tell
running
me more.
Backs. So I see that if you look at average yards per carry and these types of things for these running backs as individuals, I feel pretty good about that. The ability for them to move the ball, get first downs, run the clock, chew up some time when we need to. All those things are really good. What I would like to see is somebody to kind of step up and be the main back. And I know that's kind of Algie Brown, but I'd like to see somebody come in and be able to bust some real big plays on the ground. And yeah. I don't know that I've seen enough of that yet, like a Jamal Williams style style of plays. And so until I see something like that, I probably have to stay in that B to B plus range.
Interesting. I give them an A-. I did not expect this group to give much of anything, honestly. And while maybe I am grading on a scale a little bit, I just am very impressed with this group and what they have accomplished. Algie Brown, I honestly, after the first few games, it seemed like he wasn't running into the holes yet well. I felt like wasting our time with him a little bit. He has, in the last few weeks, it's almost like he's transformed into a different running back. And, on BYU Sports Nation, Harvey Ungo was on the show and said he had some conversations. I don't know if that's what clicked or what, but something clicked, Matt, and it's been pretty awesome to watch. These last few weeks as he's kind of found his own. But yeah, I'm pretty pleased with the running back play. How about the wide receivers?
Wide receivers, I don't know. I have a hard time coming up with a grade for this one, but I'm going to also go with a B plus with the wide receivers. I think I was expecting a little bit more out of the receiver core than what we've been getting. And when as I look at the statistics, I'm really surprised to see that Blackman's got almost as many yards as Mitch Matthews. And a slightly higher average per catch, but no touchdowns. And he's got a long play and some other things that make up some of those numbers. I also look and I see the top. I do like the fact that it's spread out. You've got five receivers make up almost all of the receiving yardage,
which is kind of what we thought at the beginning.
And
of the
I
year.
Like that because that shows that it's the core of the it's a receiving core working together, providing the quarterback an opportunity to spread the ball around a little bit. I do like that. What I am disappointed with is I'd like to see a little bit more of us taking advantage of the height of some of these receivers, but I think sometimes we've got a hard time doing that. Bringing the ball down or putting the ball in the right place in order to do that. Sometimes the ball gets knocked out and those types of things with a couple of these guys. So I'd like to see us get them in a position to take better advantage of that.
See, it's funny that you say that. I will also give them a B plus. I think we try to do the height thing too often. Mitch Matthews so far this year has 33 receptions, which leads the team. But on 69 targets, Matt, that's less than a 50% completion rate to Mitch Matthews.
Yeah. But I don't feel like those incomplete passes they're not high balls.
A lot of them are. They're to the sideline.
But you look even in the Cincinnati game, I feel like there were a lot of drops that were catchable in the breadbasket area, reachable, normal passes.
Yes.
That were just hitting people in the hands and dropping down.
Well, I'll tell you what. Mitch Matthews, friend of the podcast, he's been on our podcast earlier this season. I just think he's I think we are, we have become, I think Anai's become infatuated with throwing the ball kind of up to him. And I would rather us spend some of those targets elsewhere, and maybe use him in a different way, maybe as more of a tight end. You know, not from a blocking perspective, but from the routes that he runs, which would still take advantage of his size, right? But not always a fade, not always a throw to the sideline and let him jump up there and get it, because that's a, I mean, unless your quarterback, which Tanner is accurate, but if you look at his completion percentage to every other wide receiver is in the mid-60s. And with Matthews, it's below 50. You know, that's something else. Nick Kurtz, to me, I thought he'd have a monster season. He has had two really great games. But like you've said, this is a spread-it-around offense at this point. Somebody has a monster game every day, but it's going to be one of those five guys, and I can't predict ahead of time who it will be. Right?
Well, but and it's a different player every time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it, and then every once in a while, somebody will just pop up and surprise you, like a Colby Pearson.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you what, the guy that I'm really pleased with how he's played, and I love it when they get him the ball, is Mitchell Juergens.
Love it.
He leads
love Mitchell Juergens.
He leads the team in yards after catch. 40% of his yards are after catch, which is extremely high ratio, by the way. For comparison, Mitch Matthews, 14% of his yards are after the catch.
Well, but Mitch Matthews is, like you've talked about, is put in a position where he's almost always either going to get tackled right after he catches it because he's jumping up high for it, or he's catching it in the end zone. I mean, he's got 6 of the 12 touchdowns.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I think that statistic becomes a little bit situational in that.
I agree. And we're throwing so far this year. Tanner specific, but so far this year, but because Tanner's thrown so many of the balls this year, it's pretty close. 25% of the of his passes go Mitch Matthews' way. I think in the back half of the year, I would like to see that come down, not a lot, but a little. I'd like to see it come down a little. Matt, let's move on to the offensive line. What grade would you give the offensive line?
Oh, I love this offensive line. I'm giving them an A.
I am giving them a B+. I like what they're doing. There is a little bit of inconsistency game to game, but they protect Tanner pretty well. And the run game, part of the success of the run game that I talked about earlier with the running backs, is due to better offensive line play in the running game the last few weeks. So I'm very happy with what they've done.
You know, and we've talked about the offensive line before. If you take this offensive line compared to the offensive line last year, I think there's real marked improvement.
Yes,
you know,
I agree.
Tanner Mangum, as you already noticed, not sacked a single time last weekend against Cincinnati.
Yeah.
I mean, he barely had pressure on him all night.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is, you know, if you look at the season statistics for, say, the running game, last year would look a little better or similar, except we have yet to play the weak part of our schedule, right?
Yeah.
If you factor in who we've played, the running game and the passing game are better than last year, both from a sack, you know, percentage of plays and yards per carry. I think the offensive line, to your point, has it's much better than last year. I never gave the offensive line last year anything better than a C+. So, marked improvement. Flipping over to the other side of the ball, Matt. The defensive line, let's talk about their brother and in the trenches, the defensive line. What grade would you give them?
You know, I'm also going to go with an A.
Wow, you're an easy grader.
We've owned the trenches.
Yeah, except for
in
UCLA
most of these games,
and Michigan.
In most of these games. You know, and you look at, you know, I'm a little bit biased because we are coming off of a huge defensive performance, in my opinion, from the offensive line last year. Now, I know some of those sacks, some of that credit has to go to the defensive backfield for really lock, especially in the second half, for really locking down the receivers. I mean, he just had nowhere to go with the football.
He didn't.
And there's some linebacker play in there, which we'll get to in a minute. But if I, you know, you look at Tuiloma when he's healthy, you look at Bronson Cafusi, even Rowley. I mean, you just. I've been really pleased with the way that this offensive line has played.
Yeah.
And You know, and again, I still, you got to combine this with the linebackers a little bit, but even when Tuiloma was out, and the stuff that the unit was able to do, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I would say I'm going to split this grade. I'm going to cheat a little bit, Matt, because I'm a cheater. Okay.
It's okay. I'm an easy grader, so it kind of works out.
C plus without Tuiloma and an A minus with. His presence, now statistically, you're not going to look at him and say he's had four tackles so far this year, 1.5 for loss, and 1 quarterback hurry and 1.5 sacks. Actually, 1.5 sacks in 3 games for a defensive tackle is a pretty good ratio. But
yeah,
you're not going to look at that and go, wow, this is your best defensive player. I think he might be our best defensive player. The difference in him in and him out is massively large. And I don't mean any type of size joke there. He is really, really good at what he does. Obviously, Kafusi has been phenomenal. 5.5 sacks, an interception, 4 QB hurries, 2 blocked kicks, and 7.5 tackles for loss. Matt, there's been a lot of good things on this defensive line. With when Tuiloma and Kafusi are both in the lineup, it's pretty awesome.
Oh yeah.
Any doubt that Kafusi's back where he should be position wise?
Oh, no doubt at all. I think we were screaming for this all last year, right?
Yeah.
And this is where Kafusi belongs. This is where he can do the most damage. And I still believe that the defensive unit as a whole would have been better off just playing him here last year.
I agree with you, and I think he'll be playing on Sundays if he wants to. Yep. From that same position. Moving back a level, Matt, to the linebackers, what grade would you give the linebackers?
You know, this is crazy. I'm losing my mind.
An A!
I'm giving them an A. How could you
Gosh,
give them anything
man.
Other than an A?
Because, did you watch the Michigan game?
That is, listen, they had a bad game.
Yes. So
they
I can't
had a
give
bad
them an
game.
A. I can't give them an A. I would give them a B plus or A minus. I really teetered on this one. An A minus when Longy's in the lineup, and then maybe a B plus when he's not. I mean, he is good, Matt. I mean, and I don't think we're even seeing him because of the injuries. I don't think we're seeing him at full capacity all year.
Nope.
4.5 sacks, 2 interceptions, 5.5 tackles for loss. He is athletic. He is aggressive, and this year he knows where he's supposed to be, when last year a lot of times he did not.
He's responsible for a negative 60 yards.
Yes.
By himself,
just
right?
By himself.
And so is Taki Taki.
Yes.
You know, and while we're there, I left it, but so is Bronson Kafusi is up in that same range. But that's 2 linebackers. Now, I know that some of that they share because they're shared sacks or tackles for loss or whatever.
But still.
It's very solid linebacker play. Very solid linebacker play. And the fact that they can plug these guys in, rotate these guys around, and what they asked the linebackers to do when Tuiloma was out,
yep,
and as they
yep.
put in different packages against, you know, freshman quarterback in Cincinnati and these other things, and the way these guys have adapted and played to the scheme, I mean, it is very impressive.
Yeah, I agree.
Against some decent offenses.
And the crazy part about it is I don't think Warner is playing to his potential yet.
No, he's going to get better.
And he's going to get better. Pakula has 36 tackles, which leads the linebackers, 3.5 for loss and a couple of sacks. Basically, all of the linebackers are playing well right now. I agree with you. They are playing. I just can't give them a straight A, Matt, because of that Michigan game. And a little bit of the UCLA game as well. I can't give them a straight A, but they are definitely playing well as a unit. Defensive backs, Matt.
See, I
are you going to hand out another A?
No, I'm not as soft on the defensive backs. I'm a little bit harder on defensive backs.
That's because you're a former linebacker.
So I'll apologize for that.
It's all the defensive backs' fault, right? Always.
But B plus. I will say that.
Oh,
B to B plus.
Wow, you are so generous. I'll give them a B minus. I think, and unfortunately, some of this is injury related when Nakua's out. But one of the reasons I also can't give the linebackers maybe an A is guess who leads our team in tackles? A safety.
Yeah, I know. I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. That you always, never want a safety to lead the team in tackles.
Yeah, and Wadsworth is a good tackler, and he's good in run support. He is, and it showed itself in the first half against Cincinnati. He sometimes gets absolutely lost in pass coverage.
Yes.
He is out of position in the zone. It led to a couple big plays by Cincinnati. To his credit, though, those things were corrected later on in the game, but still, we had to have a comeback mainly because the defense gave up a bunch of big plays, and it was mainly the defensive backs because they were not slow developing plays necessarily. They were, oh look, wide open running down the field. So Nacua though has been something else.
Nacua. I'm thinking Nacua might be a robot.
Well, but the
he
thing
might
is,
be a late generation Terminator come back in time.
He sometimes makes these crazy athletic plays, and then there'll be other downs where I'm not sure what he's doing. But I like having him on the defense, and I'll take what we get there. Matt, I have a phrase for you. Tell me if you think this is true. Michael Davis, shut down corner.
See, that's where I was going to go. I think Michael Davis is very good.
Leading
the team in pass breakups.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't. People can't throw his way consistently. And that's
Cincinnati
when you
couldn't
can get that. When you can get that out of him, that's huge for the defense.
I mean, the greatest thing that can happen to a corner from when you're watching the games is they never say his name. Right?
Right.
It's like when, you know, Darrell Revis is at his peak or Dion when he has his peak. Nobody throws over there. You don't call their name because there's no reason to call their name. They've shut down the guy. And I don't know if Davis can do that against elite, but newsflash, we don't play elite wide receivers the rest of the year, save depending on who we play in the bowl game. And Cincinnati had some very athletic guys, so did East Carolina, and he did a really good job in both of those games shutting down some pretty athletic, non-elite, but athletic wide receivers.
Now let me ask you this question.
Okay.
So we talked about the tackles made by Wadsworth, but I feel like Davis is good, and I think there's a reason the ball doesn't get thrown his way a lot.
Yes.
But I also think we're vulnerable in a couple other spots here.
Hanneman.
We can be vulnerable when Hanneman can be vulnerable.
Yes.
Wadsworth is definitely vulnerable. So
yes.
I think when you look at Wadsworth tackles numbers, that's because his guy's getting the ball thrown to him.
Yes.
A lot.
It was
and
both
so
the run support as well as what you're talking about. Absolutely.
Yeah, and so I think there are some pieces. I think Michael Davis is very good. I think he's played very good. But I think that his shutdown corner tag is aided by the fact that Hanneman and Wadsworth leave their guys open.
Yeah.
So why throw it to the guy that's even close when, you know, I feel like they get picked on a lot,
right.
Those two. So there is some give and take there, you know, but I think when you look at Nacua and what Nacua and Davis are doing, I think that's what lifts this unit up into that BB plus range for me.
Right. Yeah, and that makes sense to me. That makes sense. And obviously Nacua and Davis, as I said, are doing really well, Matt. So we've given out grades. I think overall you're saying this team is an A-minus team. Which they're 5-2 and they lost to Michigan. Oh, gosh. That is one of the worst losses I've ever watched. And I didn't actually watch it because I turned the TV off because I thought the game was over.
But you know what's crazy?
Hooey.
That's a really good football team.
Oh, Michigan's fantastic. Yeah.
That was a very painful game to watch. And I'm not looking for moral victories or any of that baloney. But that's not like there's... You know, there are games on the schedule where if we would have lost like that, I'd feel much differently about it. You know, I think Michigan is a better
team.
They're
legit.
Yeah. They're better than we thought they were going to be.
They may have given up a chance to play for the national championship because of that loss. Two losses is going to be very hard because I think there's going to be at least one or two undefeated teams left out of the Power Five. They're not going to make it even if they end up winning the Big Ten outright, which isn't likely either. But, you know, that loss, I was thinking this thought, Matt, if they went undefeated and the only game they lost was to a potentially undefeated Pac-12 champion in Utah, they're automatic in the top four, right?
Oh, if they had run the table after that, yeah, after Michigan be in the top four.
They're in the top four, automatic.
Yeah,
right?
On the way, they're going to beat Michigan State and Ohio State.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. So you look at that, and now you look at right now their upside is a New York Six Bowl. Maybe it's in top four if a bunch of wacky stuff happens. But man, what a heartbreaking loss for them. So Matt, speaking of heartbreaking losses, and not in that category, but Utah State stunned Boise State this weekend. So This has been all over Twitter. It's been in a lot of different places. So Matt, I'm going to bring it up. It was also covered by Mike Sorensen in the Deseret News. Could the BYU Utah State matchup in November be a play-in game for a New York Six Bowl? Let me phrase it two ways for you, okay? Utah State right now. Let me get to the page. I had it. But BYU, okay. Say BYU runs the table, because this only works if BYU runs the table. Okay? So BYU is a two-loss team with their only two losses to a good UCLA team and a very good Michigan team. Okay? Utah State's resume would look like this. They now, of course, would have beat Boise State, who's kind of the Mountain West power. I don't know how much that's really saying, though. The Mountain West as a group is not that great. But their only losses would have been to Utah and to Washington on the road, say they run the table. But unfortunately for them, the only two signature wins would be us and Boise if they mark it through. So, Matt, percent chance BYU, if they ran the table, would be in the New York Six Bowl, over under 25%.
I'm probably going to take the under there.
I am also going to take the under. Percent chance Utah State, if they ran the table, is in the New York Six Bowl, over under 25%. Under.
But that one's closer in my mind.
But here are the reasons why, and I'll give you a couple of reasons why. Their names are Memphis, Toledo, Temple. You know, these are all non-P5 teams that are undefeated.
Yeah.
Now, not all of them are going to remain undefeated, but Memphis just knocked off a good Ole Miss team. Not a great one, but a pretty darn good one.
And they looked pretty good doing it.
Yeah. That to me is the reason why the chances of, even if both of these teams are on the table, you're going to be a two-loss team, and there's going to be some undefeated and or one-loss teams that will have had good wins on their resume. So I look at that and I say, quite frankly, I don't think they will be playing for that. But I'll tell you what, if we both run the table between now and the game, that the hype machine in Utah for the Aggies-Cougars matchup will be really high.
Yeah, it will. Oh, yeah.
So, Matt, I got a question out of the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
From Justin D. Sweeney. That's on Twitter. He asked if this seven game stretch to start the season 5-2 the best seven game stretch in Broncos career. So Matt, off the top of your head, without looking back, and we will look back at some of the seasons, what do you think?
The best stretch in his career?
Yeah. Best stretch in his career.
I mean, maybe, but I'm gonna go ahead and say no.
I am going to say no, but it's close. Okay, so let's look at what are his best seasons. Let's start off with that. Okay, the best seasons for Bronco, and I think this is pretty indisputable, are 2006, 11-2, And let's see, let's throw in the trifecta of 2007 and 2009. And then I'd throw, even though 2013 was an 8-5 season, it was a really good schedule. I think it was good. But let's just call it 2006, 2007, 2009. Okay? So looking at those seasons, Matt, there's some pretty good 7-game stretches in there. And that's why I would say probably not the best, but it's a pretty good stretch, right?
Yeah, it's up there. I mean, it is a very good stretch.
So think of it this way. To end the year, so BYU in 2006 started off 1-2, right? Lost to an Arizona team that we shouldn't have lost to, and lost to a good Boston College team. We then went and won 10 straight games. On that winning list was TCU, 11-2 that year. That's probably the only really good team, but man, they played really well that year.
They did.
They played really well that year. But it's close, isn't it? I mean, they've beaten, we almost beat a pretty good UCLA team. Only loss where you scratch your head is to maybe the best defense in the country in Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, you had every opportunity to win that UCLA game. You very, very much a winnable game, as it turned out. You lose to Michigan, who is probably a top 10 football team.
Yeah.
And then you're looking pretty good. Other than that, you look very good.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. You look at this stretch. I think after that Michigan game, we're all kind of like, maybe this team just isn't any good. You know, maybe they're not good. And then you look back and you say, the only two losses are to top 30 teams in UCLA and Michigan. We have a win over a borderline top 30 team in Boise State. And then we've handled our business against the weaker part of our schedule so far. And you look at the rest of the schedule, there's not a lot there. So we're going to get to that here in a second, Matt. Let me get back to my agenda, make sure I'm not skipping anything. So before we get to looking at the rest of the season and making predictions on that, everyone's talking about it, Matt, and we've talked about it very briefly, Hill or Mangum in 2016. So, Matt, I'm going to ask you right now, Hill is 100% healthy come fall ball. Mangum ends up playing like he has the rest of the year, maybe even statistically a little better because the schedule gets easier. Who you got? Who you starting? You're Coach Mendenhall. You get to make the call, or you're Anai, or Jason Beck, or whoever gets to make the call. What's the call?
I'm playing Taysom.
I am playing Tanner.
Really?
I don't know that you can go back. Can you go back if this team, like if they end up, if something weird happens and the wheels come off here in November, then it's totally different. But if he finishes the year with only 3 losses against this schedule, with miracle wins against Nebraska and Boise and great performances in really good performance in UCLA, great performance against Cincinnati on a bad leg. Gosh, how do you tell that kid you're going to sit down?
I think a healthy Taysom beats UCLA.
I agree with you. But does year 2 Tanner give us any less of a shot than of against that tough 2016 schedule? Does it really year 2 Tanner any worse off than Taysom?
I don't know.
It's tough. But,
I don't know. I think you've got to play Taysom if he comes back.
Ah, gosh, it's going to be.
He's awesome.
What are the chances he transfers?
I think he stays. I think he comes back and stays.
I don't know. Michigan might be looking for a quarterback.
Yeah, well, and who knows if Harbaugh will still be there? He's going to get some job offers.
He's not going back to the NFL. He hated the NFL.
He's not a good NFL coach. He's what? Better suited. He's better suited for college
That's
athletes.
Crazy.
He is better suited to coach college players than NFL players.
Stop
Period.
It.
Period.
Stop it. Come on.
He's no Gary Croton, but he's better off. You know, and we had this same conversation. We've talked, Pete Carroll was like this at one point in his career. But right now, Harbaugh is a better college coach than he is a pro coach.
I I don't know if I agree with that statement. I see where you're drawing the conclusion from. Obviously, the last year he was in San Francisco, but 18 months ago, everybody was saying that Harbaugh might be the second best coach in football, in the NFL, behind Bill Belichick. So I have a really hard time that 18 months later, because the wheels came off of the 49ers in 1 year. Now, obviously, there's a lot there. Guys retired. Some people didn't like playing for him. And his shtick, some parts of him work better at the college level. But, man, he was a pretty darn good. I can think of about 20 NFL teams that would like to hire him. You know what I mean? Maybe those Buffalo Bills, who are having buyer's remorse with Rex Ryan, they might make him an offer. Shots fired, Bills fans. Don't worry, they'll be the Toronto something or other here in 5 years anyway. So Matt, let's move on from Hill and Mangum and talk about the rest of the year. So I've got a tweet bag question from Andre Hutchins. That's at @AC_Hutchins. He asks, is USU now BYU's favorite, toughest remaining game? And we also had Beat Wagner, that's at Sean Howard 1985. He says, how many games of the remaining six will BYU win? He says he's going with at least five. The only toss-up is Missouri. So, Matt, let's go down the line.
Let's do it. We love doing this.
We do. Okay? So, starting with Wagner, loss, right?
Those Seahawks.
It's not the Seattle Seahawks? Oh. Okay, then we can have a win, right?
Hey, you know that there's an assistant basketball coach at BYU who's in the Wagner
Quincy
Sports
Lewis.
Hall of Fame.
Quincy Lewis, yeah.
They
have a Sports Hall of Fame. So Wagner, we're given a win, obviously, both of us, because we're not stupid. San Jose State, right? That's not much tougher than Wagner.
Yeah, that's a win.
So Missouri right now, Matt, they don't look very good. You know, at the beginning of the year, I thought this one, chalk it down as a loss. I don't feel that way. I say BYU wins that game.
See, I can't come off of my prediction here. I don't know why.
You pansy?
I can't do it.
I did. I waffled like a politician. Why can't you?
I'm still going to say loss here.
You're going to say loss to a team that lost to Kentucky?
Yeah, I am.
I'm not. We win.
This is also a team that has two games that ended in a score of 9-6.
Two games.
No, I think they lost to a good. I think Florida is good.
Yes.
I think Georgia's pretty good.
Georgia's not that great.
Connecticut, that one's not. I can't really defend that one.
I can't defend that one at all. Georgia, yes, that lost to Tennessee. And got handled by Alabama at home. They're good, but they're not, like, great. Right? I don't know. I'm predicting a win. You're predicting a loss. It's not ridiculous either way.
Yeah, but it kind of is, though, right? I mean, this is a team that's 98th in passing yards and 122nd in the rush.
Yeah, their offense is not good. And I think our offense will be able to put up mid-20s, maybe 30 points against their defense.
But, well, really? Because their defense has only let up 13 points a game.
So what? They've got these two games. They've got a game where they gave up six to Connecticut in there. I don't buy their defense as being that good.
You got to be careful there when you throw stuff around like that, right? Because you got to think about the transitive properties of shared opponents or whatever, right?
Transitive properties.
What was our Connecticut score?
We beat Connecticut and we gave up
13 points.
We gave up 13! 13! Come on. They scored 9 points against that UConn defense, which is terrible. 9 points, Matt. 9 points. Fresno, we're saying they win.
Came in the fourth quarter there.
Oh, stop it. You're being ridiculous now. Utah State, that's where I'm saying we lose.
Yeah, I think that's crazy.
Why is that crazy?
Utah State. And I know, Utah State's probably better than Missouri.
Of course they are. They are a better team so far this year. You know, if you look at the advanced rankings, Utah State's like the 38th best team, and Missouri's like 60th. I think, how about, we'll put it this way. Both of us believe they will drop one of those games. College football is hard.
Yeah, I'm totally comfortable saying that.
College football is hard. And they're both quality opponents. One of them, you know, on a neutral field, which won't be neutral. Right? And then the other one in Logan, right? I'm not misremembering that. So you've got one in both of them on the road, basically. I think they drop one of them. Is it Mizzou? Is it the Aggies? I don't know which, but I'll tell you what, the Aggies have kind of had our number recently, and they'll be highly motivated to beat us. Now, granted, I think we'll be highly motivated, but it will mean more to them. And that game, those type of games always scare me, right? They're still the younger brother, if you will, to BYU and Utah in the state, and it will mean a lot to everyone involved. And BYU will be not playing for New York Six Bowl. They're going to be basically, you know, end of the year. That game worries me a lot. But percent chance we don't lose another game this year, over under 40%.
Under.
You think it's less?
Oh, wait a minute. Higher. Sorry, over. I'm taking the over.
You're taking the over.
I think we lose one more. I think that's over 50%.
No. Sorry. I may have missaid that. Percent chance we go undefeated.
Less than 40. I'm taking the under.
I am also taking the under. It's just hard. College football's hard. And these two games are not easy. I don't think we have a chance of losing any of the rest of the games. San Jose State and Fresno State aren't any good. But Utah State and Missouri, as much as I just poo-pooed them, they're not terrible, right? They're not a bad team.
And part of what makes me nervous about the Missouri game is that they're not awful, but they're sandwiched between they're in this like terrible game sandwich.
Yes, yes, they are.
You know, where you're going to be coming off of a Wagner and a San Jose State game right into Missouri in this neutral, I'm using air quotes, location. With a team that's not terrible. I mean, they're no Wagner or San Jose State.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think that's a game where that team could come out, punch you in the mouth, and get out in front, and maybe have a hard time getting back in it.
And I think we'd all feel better had they played, say, the week before they play Alabama or Florida or LSU, right? And you'd say, coming off that, they're going to be beat up, worn out, and then we could come in and maybe pick one off easier than, but they're going to be coming off against a home game against Mississippi State, who's a decent team, but they're not Florida, LSU, or Alabama this year, right? So I'm with you. I agree with you. I think there's a lot of danger there. I just if I'm going to pick a loss, I think it's going to be Utah State. Well, Matt, we've reached the end of our hour talking about BYU sports.
Love it. Love it. Can I just take a minute to say, you know, there's a whole stretch of the year where we have no college football to discuss.
Yes.
And right now we are right in the middle of what is turning out to be an amazing college football season, and that's awesome.
Awesome. So Matt, with that, I lied. We're not going to quite end yet. Very, very fast, with no explanation whatsoever, your top four teams for the playoff. As of right now.
Oh man, we're gonna get all sorts of hate mail for this.
Utah, you're gonna say it, aren't you?
In no particular order.
In no particular order, you red-bellied traitor.
Ohio State, Utah, LSU, Michigan State.
Michigan State, huh? You're gonna put two Big Ten teams in there, eh?
Oh, I'm a homer. I did this last year, too.
Yes,
remember, I did that a bunch last year.
Yes, you did.
It was the same two teams.
Yes, you did.
All right, I'll pull them out. I'll pull them out. Ohio State,
no, you don't
Utah,
have to pull anybody out.
TCU, LSU. How's that? You feel better about
it? I don't. Ohio State, Baylor, Utah, and LSU.
Yeah, that's probably more reasonable.
No, I'm doing it Bama. Bama's in there.
Oh, stop it. Bama.
Yes.
Thumbs down.
I think they're good. I think they're pretty good. I think, and they'll get a chance in a few weeks to either make me sound, I guess it's 3 weeks, their bye week is Halloween. They'll get a chance. They'll get a chance. But notice we both put Utah in there.
Yeah, I probably, you know, if I'd probably do Ohio State, Baylor, Utah, LSU, your original pick before you got weird and put Bama in. That's probably where I'm most comfortable with.
It wasn't that weird. They're a one-loss SEC team.
It wasn't any more weird than me putting Ohio State and Michigan State in my top.
And by the way, I love that neither of us mentioned an ACC team.
Is that still a conference?
Apparently a power conference. But to me, the winner of the Baylor-TCU game, as long as they don't trip up someplace else. But I'm not that impressed with TCU this year, honestly.
No.
They've not played as well this year as they did. But in the end, if they keep winning, that may not matter. The computers like them actually slightly better than Baylor to this point in the year. But they'll get a chance. One of them will get a chance to show the other one who's boss, as it were.
Well, you know what they say about the Big 12, one true champion.
Yeah, except when there's two. So, Matt, this has been a podcast. There's no doubt about it. Unfortunately, Boston Batman, he got called away by the Boston Batman signal to go do some stuff and beat up criminals. So he'll be hopefully making his reappearance next week. We will also next week, Matt, having our men's basketball preview.
Yes.
So we will be jumping into and talking more about the men's basketball team next week for this season, which I think will be very, very exciting. So thanks, listeners, for downloading, for listening. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and get all of your news, BYU sports news, at CougarFan.com, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!